program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting content from the December 2024 issue of Southern Living Magazine. This week, we're going to wrap it up by finishing that recipe for the big white cake, the big white sheet cake that we had to leave off in our last episode. And then we'll read an essay about a community of disabled adults in Texas and how they are brightening their holidays. Okay, ready? The cover of this magazine, incidentally, has a coffee-colored background. And then a blurred Christmas tree in the background, a fir tree with gold and white lights also blurred in the background. In the foreground is a glass pedestal, cake pedestal. And upon that pedestal is a big white frosted cake. It's a three-layer cake, we know, if we heard our last episode. And atop the cake are some white edible poinsettias with gold berries and green leaves, some green leaves. Basil leaves for decoration. Just to the right of that cake dish are two champagne glasses filled with an apricot-colored beverage. The table has a golden tablecloth on it. Everything is a warm golden tone here. And there's a branch of artificial pine branch that's strewn across the base of the cake pedestal. So it's got some pines, little pine cones on it, and some pine leaves on it. The print from top to bottom. Christmas double issue. Southern Living. Holiday spirit. The Southern way to celebrate all season long. White poinsettia layer cake, which we will get to soon, listeners. And across the bottom says December 2024. The power of poinsettias. Show-stopping cookie recipes, decorating ideas for every room, plus Southerners of the Year. And Southerners of the Year was featured in our last episode. We also covered the white layer cake, and we went through the recipe of how to make that cake, because it can be made three ways, either as a layer cake or cupcakes or a sheet cake. And we'll get to the sheet cake portion right now. And just so y'all know, all of these episodes become podcasts, so you could refer back to them at any point. And our Southerners of the Year article actually is in the 1213 podcast or broadcast. That has now become a podcast. And in our last episode, the 1227 episode, that's when we talked about how to make this big white cake. And we talked about the layer cake and the cupcakes and, of course, the recipe for the base cake, which you can find there. And now we will proceed to the sheet cake, which is, of course, has white frosting and white poinsettias on top of it. The white poinsettia sheet cake with cranberry orange filling. If you're looking for a stunning cake that travels well, try this 13 by 9 inch version. Leave it in the pan to transport it with ease, or feel free to frost the sides if you like. The active time for this is 40 minutes, total 1 hour 45 minutes, plus 2 hours cooling. It serves 18, and you'll need baking spray, brown butter cake batter, and that recipe was in our last episode. Whipped cream frosting, divided. And again, that was in our last episode, as was the recipe for cranberry orange filling that you'll need. And white chocolate candy leaves. And fresh bay leaves. And the gold dragées, which I am calling berries, that appear in the center of your poinsettias. Okay, here we go. Preheat your oven to 325. Coat a 13 by 9 inch baking pan with baking spray and line the bottom and sides of the pan with parchment paper, leaving a 2 inch overhang on the long sides. Make brown butter cake. This is step two. Make brown butter cake through step three. Spread the batter evenly in the prepared pan. Tap the pan on the counter a few times to get rid of any bubbles. Step three, bake in the preheated oven until the center bounces back when lightly pressed and a wooden pick inserted in the center comes out clean. And that'll be 50 to 55 minutes. Let cool in a pan on a wire rack 15 minutes. Remove from pan and let cool completely on wire rack about 2 hours. And the center may dip slightly as it cools. Step four, using a serrated knife, trim domed top off the cake if needed. Discard your trimmings. Place the cake on a serving plate, cut side down, and discard the parchment. Spread 1/2 cup of the frosting in a thin layer on top. Spoon 1/2 cup of frosting into a piping bag, or you can use a Ziploc plastic bag. Just cut a 1/2 inch hole in the tip or corner. Step five, pipe 1/2 inch tall border of frosting around the cake edge. Dollop and spread the filling evenly within the border. Reserve 1/4 cup of frosting to decorate the sides of the cake if desired. Pipe some of the remaining frosting over the top of filling, smoothing as desired. Pipe 3 small mounds of frosting on top of the frosted cake, about 6 inches apart, to serve as bases for the poinsettias. Tuck candy leaves into mounds in a star shape, layering the leaves and piping additional frosting on backs of leaves as needed. Oh, let me try that one more time, listeners, that sentence. Tuck the candy leaves into mounds in a star shape, layering the leaves and piping additional frosting on backs of leaves as needed. Pipe a small dot of frosting in the center of each poinsettia and arrange the dragées in centers. Tuck in fresh bay leaves as desired. Remove dragées and bay leaves before eating. And there we have our big white cake recipe completed. And now, listeners, we'll move on to the power of poinsettias. Each year, residents of a Texas community for adults with disabilities brighten up the holidays with 50,000 of these seasonal plants. And we have a double page photograph of 6 of these residents. One happens to be in a wheelchair. They are all holding poinsettia plants. 3 red ones, 2 white ones, and a pink one. There are 3 women and 3 men in the picture. And the caption of the picture is, "Spreading joy, Brookwood community citizens show off their hard work." From left, Stephen Taintor, Megan Rogers, Brian Chambers, Christine Cohn, Michelle Wild, and Kim Sneed. And listeners, they are standing in a greenhouse surrounded by, I can't tell you how many poinsettias, hundreds and hundreds. Looks like maybe 1,000 of red and some white and some pink poinsettias. This article is written by Caitlin Yarborough Sadek, and we'll begin. A little while back, a neighbor knocked on my door, hoisting up a ruby-red plant so enormous it concealed her completely from midriff to head. I was new to the area, and this was her way of welcoming me. A poinsettia, vividly colored, overflowing its pot, and endearingly ill-timed. It wasn't even Thanksgiving yet. But the plant seemed to brighten up the whole world just a bit. as if daring anyone to reject the early holiday spirit. You could say it kick-started my love for the leafy shrub and what it seems to represent, a simple kind of goodwill. There is perhaps nowhere in Texas, or on the entire earth for that matter, where poinsettias create a more spectacular display than at the Brookwood community in Brookshire, Texas, less than an hour from Houston. For over 35 years, the organization has dedicated much of its yearly calendar to growing the plants well ahead of the Christmas season, with seeds sown in summertime and then nurtured in 47 greenhouses until the last months of the year. And by the first weekend of December, people are allowed to peek at the horticultural feat. 50,000 glorious poinsettias, bursting with color and ready to be taken home or sent off to churches, schools, and offices in the nearby city. At the annual open house just before 9 a.m. on a Saturday in early December, the grounds are buzzing with activity at the Brookwood Community Garden Center. In a flurry, staff members donning Santa hats duck and dive into various sheds outside, wheeling carts of flora in and out, quick flashes of scarlet leaves disappearing behind hazy walls. The massive greenhouses are already steaming up from the unseasonably warm Texas weather, almost stifling any sort of Yuletide anticipation. Almost. Luckily, the greenhouse's inner spoils more than make up for it. And listeners, now we have photographs on the rest of this page and the page adjacent to it. The first is a picture of a man holding two poinsettias and standing in the middle of a poinsettia garden in the greenhouse. The poinsettias are up to his mid-calf. And the caption of this photo is, "The Nice List. We provide plants to customers and organizations that we've been honored to work with for almost 20 years, says Horticulture Director Robert Grove." And on the following page, we'll go counterclockwise from top to bottom. There's a small photo of, poinsettias that are wrapped. Red poinsettias wrapped in white paper. And the caption is, "Ready to gift." All of the 50,000 full-grown poinsettias are packaged and tagged by Brookwood citizens leading up to the annual open house sale. The next photo is a picture of one of the citizens walking with some poinsettias on four of them in a tray that he's holding up, sort of like a waiter style, coming in with that tray. He's wearing a Santa hat and a red festive Christmas shirt and cranberry-colored trousers. He's walking down an aisle in between these look like geraniums in the greenhouse. And the caption of this photo is, "Handled with care. Brookwood citizen Jared Mesker helps transport young plants to and from the nearly 50 greenhouses spread out across the campus." Then there's a photo of red poinsettias, white poinsettias, and pink poinsettias against a black background. And that caption is, "Pops of color. Brookwood's annual poinsettia sale features many different varieties to choose from, including..." From left, this is the red Poinsettia Queen Pink, Poinsettia Pure White, and Premium Lipstick Pink. And the final photograph is of a white dog. Looks like a golden retriever. And the caption, and that dog is wearing a black and white checkered bandana. And the caption is, "In the spirit, It's all hands on deck during the community's busiest season, and Pup Maisie helps keep up team morale and welcome guests. And the caption on the page is, they love the opportunity to shine, and they certainly do when it comes to their poinsettias. And that's a quote from Robert Grove, the horticulture director. More photos on the following page. In the greenhouse, thousands of pink in the foreground, and then white and red poinsettias in the background. That caption is Photo Ops. In addition to plant shopping, the Brookwood community hosts pictures in the poinsettias for families and friends to take portraits amid the festive scenery. The next photo is Lending a Hand, and this features a resident sitting in a wheelchair and holding some pink poinsettias in the greenhouse. Kim Sneed, who's been a Brookwood citizen for 37 years, is a member of the horticulture team and participates in many campus activities, including bingo and pool fitness. And that caption was Lending a Hand. And then there is a photo of some of the wrappers and the wrappers for the plants, for the poinsettias, or markers, excuse me, they are markers, which feature a subtitle of the Brookwood community and three of its citizens. And then the printing is too tiny to be legible. But the idea is that each of the plants gets one of these little tags that gets inserted into the soil of the plant so that they know where it came from. And finally, there is a photo of Robert Grove, again, the director, being hugged by one of the residents who's much shorter than he, looks like a younger man than Robert Grove, as Robert Grove is reading the tags and inserting them into the soils of the poinsettias. And the caption for this page is, it's just an amazing outward show of our citizens' abilities and their present helping throughout the entire process, from filling the first pots to wrapping them up for sale. And now back to our article listeners. Red, red everywhere. Rows and rows of poinsettias, thousands of them, spread across the concrete floors in a sea of crimson. The scent of damp soil and the blinding brightness of the blooms hitting my senses instantly. While the weekend is intended to allow visitors to admire and shop the plant collection, it's also to celebrate those who have had a hand in growing them. The dedicated horticulture team totals around 100 members, mostly made up of Brookwood citizens. While this organization is not technically a town, it certainly is a home for many people. Spanning nearly 500 acres of rolling hills, Brookwood serves as a residential community for adults with disabilities. Founder and native Texan Yvonne Strait started the nonprofit almost 40 years ago after her daughter Vicky developed a brain injury caused by a childhood illness. It seeks to offer a place where neurodiverse adults can live on their own, participate in social activities, learn valuable life skills, and glean a sense of purpose through working real jobs. A meaningful liberty for those who are sometimes underestimated or overlooked. From crafting handmade wares to serving customers at the Garden Center Cafe to assisting the horticulture team, more than 200 Brookwood citizens work across the main campus or at one of the two satellite locations in Texas, with around half living as residents full-time and the other half commuting daily. Honoring the successes of the citizens is just as much a focal point at the annual Christmas open house as the poinsettias, the proceeds from which go toward funding scholarships and operations for the following year. It's just an amazing outward show of our citizens' abilities. And they're present helping throughout the whole process, from filling the first pots to wrapping them up for sale, says Robert Grove, Brookwood's horticulture director. There are about a million other steps in between, and they stay excited every step of the way. Michelle Wild, a Brookwood Day citizen since 2014, assists in the horticulture process in many ways, including planting, propagating, and using her sign language skills to help fellow team members and customers. My favorite thing about the poinsettias is all the colors and getting to work with all of my friends, she says. The most important part is when I see a friend struggling. I always help. Andrew Simpson, a Brookwood Day citizen for the past 18 years, also enjoys his job alongside other hobbies such as swimming in the Special Olympics. I love working with my friends and seeing customers and showing the different types of poinsettias we grow. My favorites are the dark red ones, he says. They love the opportunity to shine, and they certainly do when it comes to their poinsettias, Grove says proudly. That much is easy to see, and in more ways than just the jam-packed greenhouses. Inside the entrance, volunteer docents offer pamphlets and welcoming smiles. In the cafe, the clang of dishware being collected mingles into familiar jingly tunes blasting over a speaker. At the nostalgic Christmas program put on by the Brookwood citizens, there's not an empty seat in the house, and barely even any standing room as I squeeze into a back corner. Applause erupts at the string of performances, including an impressive handbell ensemble who mastered many holiday sing-along tunes. I spy a few happy tears flowing in the crowd, and I feel the same familiar tingle behind my own eyes. It's said that poinsettias are favored during this season, not just for their cheery hues, but also for representing goodwill and community spirit. It certainly feels that way here. Back home from my day trip to Brookwood, I knock on my neighbor's door, holding up a magnificent, well-cared-for red plant, hoping to offer just that. And there's a photo at the bottom along at the end of the article, listeners, and it's just close-ups of the poinsettias, of the different variations and colors of the poinsettias, from red to red and white to white and pink and pink and white. And the caption of that photo is, Merry and Bright, skip the plain red for stunning varieties, including from left, white and pink premium ice crystal, neutral white wonder, speckled superba new glitter, and vibrant poinsettia sparkling rouge. And in our small remaining time, we will return to the kitchen, not for a recipe, but just to hear a little bit about the Big Easy flavor. And this is called the delicious, it's from the Welcome Table, and it's called the Delicious Mystery of Court Bouillon. This famous Louisiana dish has French and Caribbean roots and a curious history. This is by Jessica B. Harris, and there's a full-page photo of this bouillon. Clams, I suppose? Well, we'll see what's in it when we read it. big pan. Looks beautiful, but let's hear what's in it. As a food historian, I am always attempting to find the genesis of one recipe or another. Where did peanut brittle come from? How did the Huguenot tort get its name? Usually, tracing a dish's source is a road with many twists and turns, and more often than not, there are varying stories. As an expert on the cuisine of the African diaspora, I am frequently struck by how common it is for the African hand in the pot to be overlooked when folks are attributing origin. Take court bouillon, a Creole specialty. If you look it up, you'll see that it is a French term for a seasoned broth used as a poaching liquid. There are several variants of the spelling. You can find it in classic cookbooks as court-bouillon, and that is C-O-U-R-T-B-O-U-I-L-L-O-N, or court-bouillon, same spelling but two different words, no hyphen, or cubillon, and that's C-O-U-B-I-L-L-O-N, cubillon, C-O-U-B-I-O-N, and even couvillon, C-O-U-V-I-L-L-O-N. In Louisiana, it's typically a tomato-based stew with a seafood that is served over rice. All sorts of recipes will tell you that it's a poached fish dish that's essentially a Provençal bouillon base adapted to the Gulf Coast. But there seems to be no relationship, other than the name, to the standard French court bouillon. How does this happen? The tomato does bring hints of the Mediterranean, and in many ways the recipe is like Marseille's fish stew, but without the shellfish, and the rascasse, red scorpion fish, that are considered essential in a bouillabaisse. While there certainly are echoes of the south of France, I suggest looking for the answer in a different direction, the French-speaking Caribbean. In Guadeloupe, one can discover another possible connection, and it seems as though we have run out of time for today's episode of Southern Living Magazine, listeners. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we hope you'll listen next time. I'm Joanna LaForgia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. Please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you.